Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Nevermore Bookstore by Kerrigan Byrne and Cynthia St. Aubin. Narrated by Stella Hunter and Teddy Hamilton. 1. Anticipation. Noun. Hope, expectation, intuition, foreknowledge, or prescience. Cadence Bloomquist stared at the faux, old-fashioned rotary telephone, willing it to ring. It wasn't that she was waiting, per se. Waiting by the phone was absolutely not a thing Katie did, and especially not for a man, despite her best friend's completely unfounded accusations. She was merely making herself available for Nevermore Bookstore's most lucrative customer— a customer who was polite enough to place his weekly orders every Thursday night at precisely 8 p.m. Over the last several months, Katie discovered that if she not waited at exactly the right second, she could catch the gleaming gold dial and glossy black enamel vibrating ever so slightly before the brassy jumble of notes sang out. And they would. Any minute now. Planting her hands on the silky wood of the credenza her aunt had repurposed for the bookstore's cash register, Katie shook out her legs and stretched her stiff back. Any other evening and she'd be upstairs, life-rafting on her heating pad by now, doom-scrolling or binge-watching until the day melted from her bones. Still, the bookstore did take on a cozily creepy edge once the darkness pressed against the shop's large front window. Katie glanced up just as a gust of early autumn wind sent red and yellow leaves somersaulting down the empty sidewalk. Bathed in the amber glow of wrought iron street lamps, Water Street, the quaint seaport town's main drag, had already gone quiet. The locals safely tucked into their homes and the stream of tourists dwindling as they found their way back to their cozy bed and breakfasts. From the mantle of a fireplace whose chimney had long ago been bricked up, the antique brass clock began to chime. The mosh pit of butterflies in her stomach pulled out their tiny glow sticks and began to rave as she counted the bell-like musical pings. 2, 3, 4, bring. She waited the customary 1.5 rings before clearing her throat and lifting the handset from its golden cradle. The receiver was pleasantly heavy in her hand and cool against her cheek as she inhaled to issue her standard greeting. Nevermore Bookstore, this is Katie. Hearing the maniacally chirpy edge in her voice, she made a face at herself in the antique mirror above the table bearing teetering stacks of books still in need of shelving.
It's Fox.
2 syllables. 2 goddamn syllables of that smoky, sexy, fireside voice, and her vital organs turned to melted butter. Katie bit her knuckles to keep her rush of excitement from becoming the audible squeak she'd once had to blame on a smoke detector in need of a new battery, which then led to her having to replicate the sound while she put down the phone and pretended to change it. Not the ideal scenario for an auditory flirtation. "Well, hello, Fox," she said in her Wish app attempt at a seductress's drawl. Even Edgar, the bookstore's resident raven mascot, seemed to be rolling his eyes at her. I, anyway. Like the other assorted critters congregating on various bookshelves, Edgar's taxidermist displayed more enthusiasm than skill when it came to lifelike reconstruction. "How was your week?" she asked, reaching for the delicate china teacup of Earl Grey she'd put in place at exactly 7:55 p.m.
"Good. Yours?"
Hearing a muffled jingle on the other end of the line, Katie imagined him seated in a wide, wing-backed leather chair. The phone pressed to his smoking jacket as he rang a bell to order up a triple-distilled something or other from the loyal, silver-haired butler who'd been with his family for ages. Conjecture of this kind had been one of her favorite parts about their conversations. With a voice that rumbly, he'd have to be tall, or at least tall-ish. Deep-chested, broad-shouldered, or his proportions would just be all off, and he definitely didn't sound like a man whose proportions were all off. Not that it would matter, with the way her lady bits stole her heartbeat when he so much as breathed on the other line. My week was excellent. Moving her cup and saucer onto the lacy disc of a knitted purple coaster, Katie bent at the waist to ease the ache at the base of her spine. I just got in a brand new shipment.
Is that so?
Three words already, and not even a full minute in. This had to be some kind of record. The knot of tension behind her sternum began to soften. Their calls had always begun this way, with his mostly monosyllabic answers gradually lengthening as she supplied the conversational push that turned his verbal engine over. Mm-hmm, she said. You'll never believe what was in it.
I bet I would.
Four? And a voice smirk? Katie gripped the corner of the credenza to keep from swooning. Frankenstein.
Not one of the first editions of the third printing in 1831.
Even better, she drawled. One of the first 500 published with Lackington, Hughes, Harding, Maver, and Jones in 1818.
No.
Yes, indeedy. Speckled calf cover, brown Morocco spine label, and all. It had taken her 3 weeks, 20 calls, 37 emails, and promises of non-existent firstborn children and or sexual favors to finagle it from a notoriously cantankerous rare bookseller on the East Coast.
I can't believe you actually got it.
Seven. Hot damn. It almost sounds as if you doubted me. Katie looped her index finger through a coil of the phone cord, feeling like some kind of moony retro teenager.
I would never doubt you.
Katie took a sip of tea to loosen her stiff tongue. I'm not sure if that's a compliment or a red flag, considering you don't actually know me very well.
I know you have a monster kink.
Bergamot-scented mist exploded from her lips. Katie promptly managed to aspirate the rest, descending into a coughing fit that lasted a fortnight at least. Sorry, she rasped. Just went in the wrong hole. Pipe.
Hate it when that happens.
Something about the way he said it left Katie wondering which scenario he was referring to. She bent to retrieve a roll of paper towels from the cabinet below the credenza and dabbed atomized droplets from the counter's surface as she searched for a witty rejoinder. To be fair, I had only been talking to you for, 3 weeks when I made that comment about Sasquatches. Sasquatch? Oh, is there even a correct plural for that word?
I hope not, he said. And you didn't make a comment about Sasquatch. You made a comment about me being one.
That is not what I said, Katie insisted, fighting a grimace when she turned too quickly.
Then what did you say?
Caught in her own snare. Hoisted by her own petard. Grudgingly, she sank back into the memory of one of their first conversations, complete with clammy pit sweat and burning cheeks. She'd been so desperate for any scrap of information about him then, so embarrassingly obvious in her data mining. I said, how do I know you're not a Sasquatch?
Is that what you said? Because I feel like there's something missing.
He mused. Katie blew out a gusty exhale. Damn him with his stupid, raspy voice and his annoyingly perfect memory. How do I know you're not a Sasquatch with a really sexy voice? She said in the unenthusiastic cadence of a times table recitation.
So, Miss Monster Kink, will you add it to my shipment?
Questions like this were part of what informed her mental image of Fox as a reclusive scholar with ancestral money. Well, questions like this and gothic romance novels. Many, many gothic romance novels. Being occasionally bedbound was far more glamorous when you could imagine yourself as the ailing but brave heroine in an imposing manner on a windswept cliff. An ailing but brave heroine with a mysterious benefactor who never once expressed concern about the prices of the rare and sometimes almost ungettable books he asked her to find. The small, unassuming hardbound tome sitting by the phone would have cost her a quarter's worth of paychecks when she'd only been working for her aunt as opposed to running the bookstore. Buying it had been a significant gamble on her part. If Fox hadn't been interested, she'd have ended up further in debt and the book locked in the glass curio cabinet containing her other unfortunate investments.
Katie.
The sound of her name, caressed by silk and sandpaper, snapped her back to the present. I'm sorry, what? Reaching for one of the vintage cookbooks next to the iPad register, she began to fan herself as she frantically searched her short-term memory. If her cheeks grew any hotter, her glasses would be in imminent danger of fogging.
Will you add Frankenstein to my shipment?
Right, of course. Happy to. Crumpling the paper towel, she shot it at the wastebasket and missed. Any special requests or this week's order?
There is, actually.
Silence stretched over the line for a beat. I'm listening. So hard.
You wouldn't happen to have any more, like...
Another pause.
Like the extra book in last week's order?
Her mouth curled up at the corners. Extra? She asked innocently, brushing her chin with the feathery mock quill pen patrons use to sign for their credit card purchases.
The mystery,
he prompted. The sign of the four? Katie may have mangled seductress, but naive ingenue she gave in spades. Fox's epic sigh sounded like the rushing wind, followed by a mumbled,
Nancy Goo.
I'm afraid I didn't get that.
Nancy Drew.
Oh, that book. Using the full extent of the extra long cord she'd plugged in precisely for this purpose, she walked around the credenza to stand before the set of shelves she couldn't bring herself to part with, despite their slight sway-backed bowing. You're in luck, she said, running her finger down the neat regiment of yellow spines with iconic blue lettering. I have about 40 of those. How many would you like me to send?
Top five.
Done, she said, scanning the titles and dipping them forward with her index finger. She had gotten to the secret staircase when something touched her elbow. Katie let out a little screech and whirled around to find a familiar face hovering just behind her shoulder. The instant rush of relief she felt was quickly replaced by irritation as her best friend proceeded to wander around the shop, glancing behind velvet curtains, peering into the many reading nooks and shadowy corners. What are you doing? She whispered, pressing the receiver to her chest. Gemma McKendrick blinked wide jade-green eyes at her, her rosebud mouth pulled off kilter by a smirk.
I'm checking for serial killers.
Try the closet, Katie quipped. He's probably trying on my hooker heels.
Hooker heels?
Fox's voice crackled up from the region of her breasts. Shit. So sorry about that. My best friend dropped by unannounced, but she's just leaving. At this, Katie shot Gemma an expectant look and cut her eyes toward the door. You were saying? Her slide into the animated tone she reserved for Fox alone was surprisingly effortless. Gemma dramatically batted her lashes, miming a phone snuggled against her pumpkin-colored cardigan. Katie flipped her off and turned her back to her friend, her flush deepening to an atomic cherry.
She has a key.
All traces of footwear fetish curiosity had vanished from Fox's voice. No, but she does this all the time. It's really no big...
Lock your doors.
A chill lifted the fine hairs on the back of Katie's neck. What?
Lock your doors.
Coming from a man she'd never met face to face, this ought to sound creepy instead of panty dampening and protective in a John Wick meets Mr. Darcy kind of way. This is Townsend Harbor. Katie laughed, attempting to re-inject some levity into the conversation. Nothing happens here. She would have traded her autographed copy of Interview with the Vampire to know what Fox was thinking in the 12 whole seconds that elapsed before his response.
Nothing happens until it does. Lock your doors.
I will, I promise. As soon as we're...
Now. While I'm on the phone with you.
Katie shifted her weight to the opposite hip, gazing longingly toward the chaise she would have collapsed onto already were her best friend not there to witness it. See, I can't lock the door while I'm on the phone with you because the cord won't reach. I'll get it, Gemma sang, picking a dust bunny from her plaid skirt as she rose from the avalanche of books she'd been stacking.
No.
Fox's eruption was loud enough for Gemma to hear in the otherwise quiet shop. The smile melted from her face as she raised an eyebrow at Katie.
I want you to get in the habit,
he said, softer now.
Put the phone down and go lock the doors. I'll wait.
Just a minute. Katie set the receiver on its side at the phone's base and quickly locked the front door. She'd intended to repeat the process with the building's rear entrance facing Townsend Bay, but her back and hip had other opinions. Without missing a beat, Gemma shot to her feet, Mary Jane's making the old floorboards creak as she swiftly sprinted up the steps leading to the back. Katie's chest tightened. Most days, her determination not to feel sorry for herself was enough to wall off the ever-present envy she felt watching her best friend bounce around like a brunette Tinkerbell in a body that didn't randomly declare mutiny. Gemma reappeared in the doorway, tossing her dark braid over her shoulder and giving a thumbs up. Katie mouthed, "Thank you," and returned to the phone and her self-appointed security guard. Doors locked, windows shut, hatches battened, and lights lowered to discourage the late-coming retail scourge, she said. "Now, can we talk about books?" Fox cleared his throat.
"Rain check."
Katie's already heavy heart sank into her guts. He'd spoken to her from this chilly distance only one other time, when he abruptly ended their discussion about the Count of Monte Cristo after Katie had flippantly suggested Edmond Dantes should have gotten a good therapist and invested his fortune in aeronautics instead of wasting it on weasel-faced Fernand. "Of course," she said. "Listen, if it's something I said..."
"It's not," he said, cutting her off. "Just need to go."
Okay, she stammered. "Until next week?"
"Next week."
The dial tone stung her ear. Katie returned the phone to the hook, blinking away silly, childish tears. It shouldn't hurt her feelings. Shouldn't, but did. Gemma clomped down the steps and leaned against the corner of the credenza, a guilty grimace tugging at the corners of her mouth. "I'm sorry," she said. "I didn't mean to interrupt." "Yes, you did, but it's okay." Katie should have known that her attempts to evade her friend's not-so-subtle attempts to discover more about the man she'd been spending her Thursday evenings with would only serve to amplify her curiosity. It was only a matter of time. Running through the modified closing ritual reserved for her bad body days, Katie tugged the dangling brass chain to click off the knock-off Tiffany lamp at the register and picked up her teacup. The purple knit coaster below it jogged a memory. "Before I forget, do you have any yarn in hideous colors or terrible textures that you'd be willing to donate to a good cause?" Gemma folded her arms across her chest. "Are you suggesting that Bazaar Girls lacks a carefully curated inventory?" Hearing the name of her best friend's knitting and craft shop conjured soothing images of the orderly rows of colorful knots and skeins interspersed with other odds and ends and notions. Emphasis on odds. "I wouldn't dream of it," Katie said. "I was telling my mom about the Stitch and Bitch Club, and now she wants to start one with her friends." "Is that even allowed?" Gemma asked. "I'm sure they don't give them metal needles or anything, but yeah, they do crafts." "In that case, absolutely. I'll put something together tomorrow if you'll remind me." "Of course." Katie had already made a mental note to do just that. For all her many excellent qualities, short-term recall had never been Gemma's strong suit. "I just need to grab a few more books for an order and we can get out of here." Ambling over to the bookcase, Katie smiled to herself as she plucked the Nancy Drews she'd selected for Fox. When she included them in last week's box on a whim, it had been a toss-up between these or the Sweet Valley High books. She'd plowed through two or more a night sometimes during her high school hiatuses. Aunt Fern's prescription for the insomnia that had plagued Katie in the early days of her condition. Judging by the rate at which he placed his orders, Fox achieved similar results during the restless hours of the night. The image of him beneath the brocade covers of a four-poster bed, nursing a burgeoning grudge against the scheming Jessica Wakefield, provided a balm to Katie's still-smarting soul. "You know, that thing is a lawsuit waiting to happen," Gemma said over her shoulder. Cradling the stack in the crook of her arm, Katie pressed a palm to the side of the bookshelf that had developed a pronounced starboard lean. "Aunt Fern said Mount Rainier will crumble before this thing does," she said, thumping the solid oak. Gemma searched Katie's face, not so subtly looking for evidence of the grief her best friend obviously thought she was hiding. "We can talk about it, you know." "I know," Katie said. "I mean, the funeral was only 3 weeks ago." 3 weeks ago today. So that was the reason for her friend's impromptu welfare check. "I remember," Katie said. She practically raised you. Are you actively trying to talk me into a depressive episode, or are you doing shadow work again? Gemma's eyes skated toward her shoes. Guilty on both counts, Katie guessed. Anyway, she didn't raise me, Katie pointed out. Aunt Fern took me in when I was 16. I'm not a real Townsendite, remember? That she could joke about it now was a testament to time's pain-dulling quality. As an already self-conscious teenage transplant, Katie had been handed the dubious task of penetrating social circles that had been in place since forever, really. Had it not been for Gemma, she likely would have graduated without anyone recognizing her face in the yearbook. "And yet you pulled Townsend Harbor's most eligible bachelor," Gemma said, her dark eyebrow raised. Katie huffed a wisp of hair away from her face in mock exasperation. She was immeasurably grateful for the subject change. "There will be no pulling of any kind where Sheriff Townsend is concerned." Together, they migrated toward the back of the shop, turning off additional lamps and pulling down the shades. Gemma held the swinging door that opened on a hallway leading to the narrow alley between buildings. Townsend Harbor's postcard quaint historic downtown area was full of these strange intersections, impractical collisions where buildings had sprung up to service the Victorian seaport before city planning was a thing. "So things aren't going well for the two of you, I take it?" Gemma asked. "They're not going at all." Stopping at the landing at the bottom of the stairs that served as a part storage, part work area, Katie tucked her armful of books into the box labeled Fox, with large marker-scrawled letters. "I got a new shipment in today," Katie said, attempting to rechange the subject. "You did?" As predicted, her unfailingly curious friend floated over to the bench with her recent deliveries. Too late, Katie saw which box her friend was reaching for. "Not that one." Gemma shrieked and leapt back a full foot, her eyes wide as duck eggs and her cheeks pale as milk. "Jesus!" Her best friend glared at her, a hand to her heaving chest. "What is wrong with you?" From this angle, Katie had to admit the package's contents looked pretty unsettling. Poking up from the snowy mound of packing peanuts, a small pink paw stretched heavenward as if to catch a game-winning fly ball. Seized by a fierce pulse of joy, she began digging through the contents. Her newest acquisition entered the world nose first, followed by a conical, black-lipped maw bearing yellowed teeth jutting out at odd angles, and finally two glossy onyx button eyes below small pink earfolds. The gray body was the size of a cat's, but longer and lumpier. "This is Roderick," Katie said. "He's an opossum." Gemma shuddered. "Oh, where do you even find these things?" "Etsy, mostly." Katie carefully wiggled the stiff body back into the peanuts. "He was on..." A gasp stole her breath as her lower back tensed up. "He was on sale," she continued after the unwelcome twinge had passed. Concern creased her best friend's face. "Asteroid remodeling today?" The name she and Gemma had landed on after deciding that pronouncing ankylosing spondyloiditis stole too many seconds from their day, Astrid was Katie's unwelcome tenant. The ever-present, but always unwelcome, squatter who had moved in when Katie was 17 and had been renovating her spine ever since. Some days, Astrid was content to chill and admire her handiwork. Others, she'd call up a few friends and annex Katie's hips or neck. Today had been the latter. "A filthy cockbiscuit, more like." "One cockbiscuit eviction notice coming right up." Unsnapping her satchel, Gemma reached in and produced a box whose logo Katie immediately recognized. "You went to Baked? I thought you might be able to use some cannabinoid consolation." A relatively new and controversial addition to Townsend Harbor's commercial makeup, the cannabis-based vegan bakery had provided an instant hit with tourists and a source of constant and very vocal consternation for its residents. Katie's would-be suitor among them. But at only four dates in, it wasn't like she owed him every detail about how she spent her free time. Right? "Couch and cush cookies?" she asked, finding a weak smile. "Now you're talking," Gemma began climbing the stairs, glancing over the banister when she noticed Katie wasn't following.
I can't just leave him down here, Katie said, motioning toward the box she didn't dare lift in her present state.
You're right, Gemma agreed. We should put him in the alley so he can be with his own kind.
Katie widened her eyes in a pleading look. Her best friend exhaled a long-suffering sigh as she stomped back down and leveled a mock-serious look at Katie.
I'll bring that thing upstairs under one condition.
What's that? Katie asked.
You're going to spill about you and the sheriff. None of this vague, it's not going at all stuff. I want details. Times, dates, bases reached. Got it?
Deal.
She almost felt a little guilty for agreeing. Gemma was about to be incredibly disappointed. With her arms stuck straight out in front of her and her face accordioned in disgust, Gemma picked up the box by its flaps and followed Katie up one flight to the front door of the two-floor living space she and her aunt had shared. Until recently. Katie opened the door and allowed Gemma to enter first so she could rid herself of the unwelcome cargo.
Just set him on the kitchen table.
The hell I will. Gemma set the load down on top of several file boxes stacked on a bench near Aunt Fern's office. I plan on eating in there at some point in our future.
Guilt gnawed a pit in Katie's growling stomach. How long had it been since she'd invited her friend over?
They'd grabbed the occasional drink at Siren's after work. Slurped coffee together from the one semi-decent coffee cubby in town before starting their days, but they hadn't had a proper hangout since before Aunt Fern's diagnosis. Stage 4, metastatic lung cancer, officially. The decline had been so fast that Katie was still reeling from the hellish merry-go-round of medical terms, medications, well-meaning mourners. The evidence of her emotional vertigo littered nearly every surface of the lovely, lofty second-floor space that Aunt Fern had converted into her home. Wilted condolence bouquets she hadn't gotten around to tossing out sat on the dusty sills of high-arched windows. Piles of unopened mail littered the antique sideboard. Stacks of probate paperwork and file boxes huddled near the thick, intricately carved baseboards on a parquet floor badly in need of waxing.
I'm sorry it's such a mess,
she said, toeing out of her sneakers and kicking them near the front door before proceeding into the kitchen.
You have been to my home, right?
Gemma set the baked goodies on the counter and slung her coat and satchel on the back of a kitchen chair. Using it to balance, she wiggled out of her chunky patent leather Mary Janes before padding to the dishwasher. These clean? She asked, holding up two wine glasses.
Yep, Katie said. That's pretty much the dish cabinet now.
Her best friend placed them on the oversized kitchen island and grabbed a bottle of red from the small wine fridge tucked under the subway-tiled counter.
Mind if I do the honors?
By all means. Gemma made quick work of opening the wine and pouring them each a glass. Katie gratefully accepted hers, waiting for the next part of their ritual to commence.
If the ocean was beer and I was drunk, Gemma began. I'd swim to the bottom and drink myself up, Katie finished.
They clinked glasses and sipped in solidarity.
Now then, Gemma said, all business. Wine is all you're getting until you spill the tea, so you might as well get on with it.
The French Cabernet was burgundy silk in Katie's throat, spicy and full of dark fruit. She willed it to loosen her tongue.
About Ethan?
Gemma waggled her brows suggestively.
Ethan, is it?
I mean, that's his name. What did you think I call him?
Daddy, in a perfect world.
Her wine-kissed lips curved in a suggestive smile.
Or you iron-cocked Adonis, or Balls.
No way am I calling him Balls, Katie teased. I don't care what you say about the bulge in those perfectly pleated khakis. The gentleman dresses to the left. This information her unhelpful brain had filed under things I'm trying not to know. Gemma turned her leg to examine the runner in her opaque black tights.
You have any clear nail polish?
Katie didn't, but she knew who almost certainly did.
I'll check.
She drew in a deep breath, pointed her socked feet toward the living room, and continued down the hallway to the master bedroom. Sweat bloomed on her.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?